This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
This is World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show, taking you around the globe one country at a time. Tonight you have Paul.
Hello.
Damien.
Hi.
And myself, Dean. There was a great amount of anxiety in Hong Kong in the lead up to the transition of sovereignty from the United Kingdom to the People's Republic of China in 1997. Based on China's history and laws, this concern was heightened within the LGBT community.
What made it so important for Hong Kong to revive its lesbian and gay film festival under Chinese rule?
Why are there so few Asian queer films being made?
And what does having an LGBT film festival say about a city? We take our seats and nibble on our choc tops as we speak tonight with Ray Yung from the Hong Kong Lesbian and Gay Film Festival. And here's a taste of what is coming up tonight.
When we first started in 2000, it was really difficult to find any gay Asian stories. I think you have one or two, and you know, usually a lot of the time they use a lot of like eye candies, you know, in order to make it, you know, more attractive. And now I think it's a lot more diverse, you know, the movies, because you have Thai movies now, Korean movies, but now there's a lot more Asian countries that are making gay and lesbian movies.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
Wonderful news in Colombia this week. Colombia has become the fourth South American country to allow same-sex marriage after a ruling by the country's constitutional court. The Catholic country follows Argentina, Brazil and Uruguay in formally recognising the rights of same-sex couples to marry. Now, previous rulings allowed gay couples to formalise their unions before notaries and judges, but same-sex marriage had remained a legal grey area and appeals have been launched against it. Many officials had refused to register such marriage because Congress had failed to pass legislation enshrining equal marriage rights in law, and there's been protests, obviously, from gay rights campaigners. On April the 7th, the Constitutional Court dismissed a petition against equal marriage rights for heterosexual and homosexual couples, but that has paved the way for last week's ruling, which definitively establishes that the Constitution guarantees such equality, giving gay couples the legal right to marry.
Yay!
It's fantastic. So the decision is set to be recorded as an irrevocable constitutional ruling within a month, and it makes it legally valid. Six of the court's nine judges approved the ruling, so they had a clear majority, and the ruling was that all people are free to choose independently to start a family in keeping with their sexual orientation, receiving equal treatment under the Constitution and the law.
It sounds good, doesn't it?
It does, and there doesn't really seem to be a downside with this one. So about 70 unions that were previously registered only as civil partnerships will now be automatically converted into full marriages under the new ruling, and the judge who presented the motion has declared that to be so. And the leader of the campaign group Colombia Diversia says, "We can say with certainty that the Colombian courts have approved equal marriage rights, and they are absolutely delighted."
And this comes on the back of the Constitutional Court ruling last year that same-sex couples may adopt children even when neither member is the biological parent. So now they can have it all.
Just gets better and better and better, doesn't it? Now, moving on to the United States, the US Food and Drug Administration, otherwise known as the FDA, has launched a new public education campaign directed at reducing smoking amongst LGBT people between the ages of 18 and 24. Would you like to know more?
Please tell.
Well, it ain't subtle, but it's probably it's probably going to work. That features some of the favourites from RuPaul's Drag Race. I go to the States a lot, and every time I go there, I've not actually watched the show, but Everyone talks about it all the time. It is just so popular. So what's happened is the FDA has announced this $35 million campaign, and it cites research that shows that LGBT people are disproportionately likely to be smokers. Now, the campaign is $35 million funded by the tobacco industry from fees, and it will launch in print, digital, and out-of-home ads, as well as outreach at the local level within the LGBT community. Out of the 2 million LGBT young adults in the States, they think that more than 800,000 are occasional smokers. Let that sink in for a moment. The This Free Life campaign is the largest LGBT-specific campaign the agency's ever taken up. And the idea is to try and reduce the number of smokers, because the FDA has said that the young people are at a unique tobacco use risk factor because of anxiety and discrimination that they experience. And it just leads them to the dreaded cigarettes.
There you go. Over to Italy, there's been a groundbreaking case where a lesbian couple have won the right to adopt each other's children. The women won their court battle just last week. There are other cases where women have been allowed to legally adopt each other's children still in the appeal stages. So the efforts to legalise same-sex civil unions recently saw adoption rights stripped out in, I guess, a bit of a deal to appease the Catholic politicians, as you can have this if you don't have that.
Well, remember that we've spoken about this a bit, because a couple of months ago, the laws for civil unions in Italy, because it's the only country in the EU that, the only Western country in the EU that has no provisions at all for same-sex couples, it stalled, basically because of adoption
rights. Oh, so it's like Australia's
rights.
sister country.
But with better food, though.
Right.
So Rome's juvenile court made the ruling that Marilina Grassadonia could adopt her wife's twin son and her partner could adopt her son. And, of course, Grassadonia is the president of the Rainbow Families Association, has campaigned on a number of LGBT issues, so she knows what's what. And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, it's Todd Sears, founder of Out Leadership, and excited to be discussing driving LGBTI inclusion on the Worldwide Wave,
where we go around the world one country at a time. And tonight, of course, we're in Hong Kong.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
Now, Hong Kong. I've been to Hong Kong, and I liked it a lot. I thought it was great. A lot of pollution, but lovely place to be. Yeah, not a big shopper either, but if you do like shopping, Hong Kong's the place to go.
What about its LGBTI people?
Well, I didn't get to enjoy any of that. I was there on a business trip, actually, so I didn't get to do as much exploration of the LGBTI community. But we have done a bit of research for you, because we're in Hong Kong, about criminal law in Hong Kong. And
guess what? Because
it's great, is it?
Well, you know, because it started out as a British colony.
Again. Always the British colony.
Yeah. Hong Kong's criminal laws against male homosexual acts were initially a reflection of British law, so no surprise there.
What was the maximum sentence there?
Oh, it was just life imprisonment.
Oh, is that all?
Mm.
There we go.
Yeah. And then during the 70s and 80s, there was public debate about whether or not to reform the law in line with human rights principles. Crazy idea. So as a result, in 91, the Legislative Council agreed to decriminalise private, adult, non-commercial and consensual homosexual relations.
Well, that's some progress. So, yeah, all right.
And then they had the issue of it being legalised but having an equal age of consent.
What was that age of consent?
It was 21 for the gay community and 16 for heterosexuals.
Yeah, good luck with that.
So, well, no, it got better. That actually changed. So again, after being lobbied by LGBT rights groups, the Legislative Council equalised the age of consent. So now it's 16 across the board.
Just to add, though, that the law was actually quiet on lesbianism. Again.
Because Queen Victoria didn't believe that it existed.
It didn't exist. Yeah.
That's it, definitely. Now, the Hong Kong Bill of Rights Ordinance prohibits discrimination on a variety of grounds, including other status, which I think must refer to us. This has been interpreted to include sexual orientation. But the Bill of Rights, unfortunately, only applies to government-sponsored discrimination and not the private sector. Since the 1990s, LGBT rights groups have lobbied the Legislative Council to enact civil rights laws, and so far, no success. So there is no law against discrimination on the grounds of sexual orientation in Hong Kong as of yet. Now, as always, political opposition tends to come from social conservatives, often with evangelical Christian ties, who view homosexuality and cross-dressing, which they kind of conflate,
lump in together, yeah.
Yes, as signs of immorality. Now, most political parties...
I only spread that as immortality, which would be... quite a new spin.
No, that's true blood. So most political parties and individual politicians tend to avoid making any public statements in favour of LGBT rights, although it is slowly starting to change, and I wonder if a bit of that's to do with Hong Kong wanting to differentiate itself from the mainland. So cross-dressing is not illegal. Hong Kong laws allow changes in legal documents, such as the identity card and passport, but does not allow the birth certificate to be changed after a person has undergone sex reassignment surgery.
Oh, that's not great. The Court of Final Appeal of Hong Kong ruled that a transsexual woman has the right to marry her boyfriend in her affirmed gender, and that ruling was made as recently as the 13th of May.
Well, that's fairly progressive. I don't know if we've even had that recognition here in Australia. Speaking of recognition of same-sex relationships, same-sex marriage and civil unions are not currently recognised in Hong Kong, whether they be, there are no local ones or foreign, and... on a plus side, the Hong Kong government, again, has extended limited recognition and protection to cohabiting same-sex couples in its domestic violence ordinance. So, bit of a mixed bag there for Hong Kong.
Yeah, it seems like they had a bit of progress with legalising homosexuality and obtaining an equal age of consent. So that happened back in 2006. And then now it seems like they've fallen into a bit of a lull.
A little less straight than other radio stations. Joy 94.9.
When Hong Kong transitioned from British to Chinese rule in 1997, there was great concern for what this might mean for the local LGBT community. Retaining LGBT culture was seen as vital. Now, Ray Young was a lawyer who turned his hand to making queer Asian cinema. He was one of the people responsible for reviving the Hong Kong Lesbian and Gay Film Festival under Chinese rule. We asked Ray if he felt that there has been a positive change towards greater acceptance of LGBT people in Hong Kong.
Yeah, things have changed a lot. I think much, much better now. I think with globalization, you know, people travel a lot more, and so also the culture, you know, opening up a lot more emails, and people get to know more people from different culture and different backgrounds. I think open up a lot more, definitely. I think it's great because, like, a lot of the times, you know, about any kind of prejudice is really just getting to know someone, understand them, and when they become friends, then you no longer carry a lot of that stereotypes that you have of people like that. So I think even though in the majority, well, certainly in a lot of the more developed, you know, cities, you know, being gay is no longer an issue. And I think in the gay scene, certainly, I think there are a lot more people who are willing to date Asian people or Asians dating Asians. Although you still see on the Grindr or something like that, that people actually dare to say no blacks or no Asians, which up to this day, I still think, really? Hold on, you are gay. You should know about these kind of things. Why do you put things like that? Why can't you just say that? Well, anyway, you don't have to say anything. If people send you a message as a compliment, you just don't have to answer it. I don't know why people have to be basically mean, you know? And it doesn't make... well, they think that makes them better, I guess. I don't know why.
You're a lawyer.
Yes.
By trade, originally. How did you get into making queer films?
Yes, I was doing a lot of soliciting, that's why. No, well, you know, I was... you see, a good Chinese boy, right? Because your parents always want you to be a lawyer or a doctor, and I, you know, from Hong Kong, and again, you know, they want me to live at the peak, so therefore they wanted me to be a lawyer. So I did that, you know, and then, but it was never really something I wanted to do. And of course, you know, I also wanted to have a voice, like I said, being a minority. And with the law, a lot of the times, you are basically just working for the ruling class, really. So, you know, so there was a lot of things that when I was doing law that I wasn't really happy about anyway.
You've been involved in setting up and the ongoing commitment to the Hong Kong Lesbian and Gay Film Festival. What makes it important for a place like Hong Kong to have a vibrant gay film festival?
Well, the Hong Kong Lesbian Gay Film Festival actually started in 1989, and that was a time that when being gay was not legal in Hong Kong. And that went on, and then the law changed, and then in 1997, the festival stopped. And that was the time when it was hangover to China. And I think the organization was a bit sensitive about that, and also the economy was very bad at that time. So they used the excuse of saying that, oh, well, because the economy is bad, so we can't run it anymore. So that was the time then when I moved back to Hong Kong, so I decided to restart the film festival in year 2000. And that's when I started involved, you know, stuff like at 2000. And the first few years was really tough because we didn't really have a lot of funding at all. So, you know, the ticket sale basically had to cover the festival cost. And it was important because we were hanging back to China. I didn't want that, after a period of time, it would be really difficult to restart the festival. So I wanted to restart it as soon as possible so that at least that it exists, so that when the Chinese, if they really came to rule the place, then we already say that, hey, this already exists. It's a big deal if you want to change something that's already existed for a while. So that was the reason that why we had to do it.
Buenos días, soy Matthew Mitchum y estáis escuchando a Joy 94.9.
This is Dr. Sean Cole from London College of Fashion. Some things go out of style, but World Wide Wave never does. You're on Joy 94.9.
Going around the world one country at a time, tonight we are in Hong Kong,
where we're speaking to Ray Yung from the Hong Kong Lesbian and Gay Film Festival. So we're speaking to Ray of the challenges they faced restarting the Hong Kong Lesbian and Gay Film Festival, and Ray explains why he feels it is important for an international city like Hong Kong to have a gay and lesbian film festival.
You know, as a city have to have a lesbian and gay film festival because, like, it's important where people get together. There's a sense of a community and a sense of, like, sharing stories. So yeah, I think it's important.
Is it a statement that Hong Kong is a more progressive place than China because it's got a queer active art scene?
Exactly. I think that's exactly one of the reasons as well. And also because and later on we actually get some funding, not from the government, but from different charities. And I think that is important because it kind of like makes the whole festival more kind of like prestigious in that sense. And in China, you still can't have a lesbian gay film festival. I mean, there are a couple around in Shanghai and Beijing, but they're very underground. Mm. They're like shown in like embassies or, you know, university lecture room and things like that. And while ours is actually like in the papers and, you know, in a big cinema, we invited international guests.
It's visible.
Very visible. So that's a difference, right? And you know, it is important that to show that, you know, it is a much more progressive society. Yeah.
Where do you think we are at with Asian queer cinema? Are we getting better at telling Asian queer stories?
I think so. I think because, like, in when we first started in 2000, it was really difficult to find any gay Asian stories. I think you have one or two, and, you know, usually a lot of the time they use a lot of, like, eye candies, you know, in order to make it, mm-hmm. you know, more attractive. And now I think it's a lot more diverse, you know, the movies, because you have Thai movies now, Korean movies, and in 2000, I think you only get, like, Japanese and, you know, one or two movies from, you know, Hong Kong or Taiwan, basically. But now there's a lot more Asian countries that are making gay and lesbian movies. And also, I think in the West, also, you have a lot more Asian movies that are made by the local Asian communities. So, you know, and they're also different. Like, you will have, like, say, Korean-American, Filipino-American. So there is also that, you know, different ones as well, not all lumped together as before.
Any independent filmmaker will tell you how hard it is to get funding to put a movie together. Do you think it's even harder for queer film or harder for Asian films?
Yeah, I think if you want to make a gay Asian film, you have to multiply all that by another three times. Because basically everybody's going to tell you, look, there's no market for gay movies, and there's certainly no market for gay Asian movies, you know. And my challenge is that I actually make a gay Asian movie that's set in the West. So you're really, really like catered for a very, very small group of people. So all the time, you know, I'm being like, you know, question, you know, people say that, oh well, why do you want to do that? It's very difficult to make money. It's a very, very small market. But I think the thing is, like, when you want to make movies, it's like there's something that you want to say. And like I said, I just wanted to reflect a certain kind of history, opinion, attitude. I think, you know, it's great that we have, you know, film festivals like here in Melbourne, where it gives us a platform to make that voice, you know. Because, you know, apart from the film festivals, we really don't know whether the movie can really go anywhere, you know. I mean, we're lucky that we have a few distribution deals, but in general, I mean, like, in Europe, like, for example, we have no distributions at all, so I don't know whether the movie will actually find its way to be seen in Europe, you know. So, who knows? So, yes, it is always difficult to get money, but maybe that challenge is really why someone wants to do something, I think. So, yeah.
Have you got more to say? Have you got a new project on the way?
Yes, I'm developing a couple of projects, and actually I've moved back to Hong Kong, and because I want to do a movie that is based in Hong Kong in Chinese, which is something that I've never done before. It's, yeah, so I talked to my agent about it, and then my agent said, you want to do another gay story? Really?
There's so many to tell.
Can you do that? And you know, I do interviews all the time, and people always say that, do you see yourself, do you think you would just make gay movies? Do you think you are, do you just see yourself as a gay filmmaker, you know?
And how do you answer?
Well, it's just that do you ask Martin Scorsese, do you only make heterosexual movies? Do you really, you know, ask everybody, you know, like, do you just make, you know, heterosexual movies? Because, you know, nobody ever asked them that question, because, like, just because I'm gay, that doesn't, I just tell stories about my own experience, and that happens to be gay, you know, but it's just my experience. I can't go and, you know, make a story about something or someone that I really, really do not have the first-hand experience or something to say. So there's so many straight people out there who are making it, so why do I want to do that?
Ray Yung from the Hong Kong Lesbian and Gay Film Festival, thanks for joining us on World Wide Wave.
Thank you.
You are listening to the World Wide Wave, where tonight we've gone off to Hong Kong, and there we heard from Ray Yung from the Hong Kong Lesbian and Gay Film Festival. Now, what a fascinating history for a film festival. I mean, it was really stop-start right from the beginning. Notably, though, it kicked off in 1989 when homosexuality was still illegal. So that's 2 years before it was actually legalised.
That's not that surprising in Asia. I mean, Singapore has the Pink Dot Festival every year, and homosexuality is still illegal in Singapore.
Most of these movements generally will start before it's legalised. I mean, that's where the campaign
the impulse for the change begins. But then, you know, it only carried on for a few years until 1997 when China took over from the UK.
And they said, that's enough of that.
Well, yeah, and then just blamed it on the economy. And then Ray came along, 3 years later and kick-started it all again. So quite a checkered past, but it seems to be going from strength to strength despite all that.
I remember when they were going to hand over Hong Kong and Macau back to China, there was a lot of doubt about what was actually going to happen. I mean, there still is some doubt of what's actually going to happen, because I think they've got two systems, one country for another 100 years.
Well, it's funny you should say that. I've got a Chinese colleague, and I mentioned to him today that our show tonight was going to be about Hong Kong, and he made a funny comment about the tensions between Hong Kong and mainland China. And one of the arguments about Hong Kong is that it gets the best of everything. It's like Panem in The Hunger Games. So the Chinese, mainland China, there's a bit of tension because, for example, Hong Kong gets more frequent supplies of much sought-after milk powder, for example. You've probably seen all the news reports about people from China buying up all our baby formula and sending it off there and selling it for $100 a tin. So mainlanders are always complaining about Hong Kong getting the best of everything and being kind of uppity and thinking they're better. But Hong Kong, of course, has that attitude that they don't, but they like democracy. They don't want to be like mainland China.
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. So obviously there's that tension there because, as Ray points out, Hong Kong is the more progressive society. You know, so they've got the film festival now. It's, you know, thriving by comparison to some of the things, the examples he provided. I think it was Shanghai he mentioned that has the does have queer film festivals, but they're all underground. So it's, you know, it's not a public thing. There's no visibility. It's really there for a select few, but it's not really getting the exposure compared to Hong Kong, which is really putting it out there and, you know, publicly bringing that to the people. So there are differences, clearly. It's just a matter of who needs to cede to who and, you know, who's calling the shots.
Well, you only have to think back to the democracy protests. You couldn't imagine anything like that happening in mainland China.
Yeah, like Tiananmen Square, that didn't work out very well.
That didn't work out
so well.
Now, speaking of, you know, aiming for what you were saying about the film festival, that's not the only thing Hong Kong is trying to host. They are in a bid at the moment to host the Gay Games. It's one of the 18 cities nominated to host the Gay Games in 2022, and it's the first Asian city to ever be shortlisted. Some of the other cities are Tel Aviv, Washington, D.C., Cape Town, Denver, Dallas, Los Angeles, and a community, out in HK, an LGBT community that organises sports and social activities has launched the application and will hand in the full bid by the end of November. It's not a bad location, really, when you think about it, in terms of great airport. Hong Kong's got a fantastic airport, easy to get to.
Yeah, so we know you've been selling the virtues of the airport while we've been off air.
I love Hong Kong Airport. It's fantastic. A kilometre long, it's brilliant. So much better than... Anyway.
We digress. But, you know, I think bringing something like the Gay Games to Asia, Hong Kong, to me, just seems like the logical place to do it, right? You know, they've got the sort of receptive climate for it. They've, you know, I don't know, it just seems to fit. And that could then have quite an influence on China, which, you know, if we get over that hurdle, then, hey, that would be a lot of change.
Well, we've got a couple of messages that have come through. Let's see, from 560. Given the huge populations across Asia, surely there should be enough demand. Credit to Melbourne Queer Film Festival, who always have a very diverse program. There's some kind words there. And we've also got, let's see, from Florence. Elitism reigns supreme in the community, sadly. Great to see that film can open people's minds to diversity. Oh, there you go. So I think that's definitely what Ray is doing with his movies. And it is a bit of a niche market, but he's made a really, you know, he's made a good fist of it, I think. That's excellent.
And what a story. I mean, from lawyer to queer filmmaker, that's quite the leap.
I wonder what his parents said, but he mentioned that in passing. But
I just want to correct you. He's moved from being a lawyer to a filmmaker. That just happens to make queer
film.
Males.
Oh, thank you. Yes, he did make a point of that himself. Yeah.
His parents would have liked that. Now, just going back to last week's show just briefly, a bit of follow-up from last week's show. We talked about a terrible murder of in Bangladesh, one of the founders, Zulhas Menon of Rupan, who we interviewed one of the editors on the show last year, was murdered in Bangladesh. It's created a huge ripple effect across the world. There have been a number of politicians that have made, you know, public commiserations. And the latest one has been Australian Greens sexuality spokesperson Senator Robert Sims, who's moved that the Senate offers its deepest condolences to the family of Zulhas Menon, who was violently killed in Bangladesh last month. You're on Worldwide Wave on Joy.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
You can have access to one of the largest podcast portals in community radio online, all in one convenient place. Just head to joy.org.au/podcast to see our most recent podcast episode, including ours on World Wide Wave. New this week, Pets Allowed celebrate World Veterinary Day. Didn't know there was such a thing. At the Lost Dogs Home, Chris and Cam take a look at the brain-eating Beyonce. The Gay Lizard Mafia and who has ruined Eurovision and the CNC Drive Factory.
I'm just going to say, that show sounds fantastic.
The Informer tackled youth homelessness, a social and economic dilemma, and Lulu and Michael discuss the latest shenanigans surrounding Donald Trump. News, sport, entertainment, podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au/podcasts.
Hi, this is Tamás from Hatter Society, fighting for the human rights of the LGBTQI community in Hungary on the World Wide Wave.
We have spoken before about the lead role that multinational companies often play in driving LGBT acceptance in workplaces. In Hong Kong, Barclays Bank is one of those leaders, and James Wang tells his story of coming out, first in the workplace and then to his family.
My coming out is not like some of the TV drama you saw. I think it's a really step by step. Gradually, first coming out with my friends in Hong Kong. Then I think one of the breakthroughs is in the company, right? Because Richard, I'm very appreciative of Richard, because a year and a half ago, he came into my door. Suddenly he said, hey, James, we're going to launch a Spectral network of LGBT in Hong Kong. We will be the champion. Before that, I never talked about my sexual orientation with Richard. So, and Richard also told me, he said, I will be the Asian lead to lead this, but I need a champion in Hong Kong. Will you be the one? Now, I sort of thought about like 5 seconds, I said, yes. I think I still remember the main reason I said yes, because I'm thinking, Richard, you are the guy married with the 3 kids. But he's a typical straight guy, and he will carry the flag to campaign, advocate for LGBT benefit. Why I cannot? So I say yes. And gradually, I think this is a very good journey, because I'm joining a very good band. So I sort of open in my company, my department. This is a very good environment in terms of the company. In terms of Hong Kong being away from my family, I can be more comfortable to come out. That actually helped the relationship or sort of coming out with my mother, right? Because, you know, in Chinese family, we don't talk about that. We don't talk about that particular words. But gradually, your mom will know. So recently, you know, my mom talked to me. He stopped asking me, where's my girlfriend on marriage? He said, I think there should be somebody you can look after each other. As long as you live happily, we are fine. I also give an example, which is from my straight friends. We grew up together. We were the classmate from kindergarten, elementary school, high school. We all together. Then he know who I am, but we never talk about it. And he got married, and he got a wife. So every year we had this gathering, and friends are coming together. You know, with the years go by, and the member getting more and more, because the people get married with the kids, blah, blah. And this is only James' uncle never get married. So this is one year they celebrate my birthday, and everybody wishing me, I wish James healthy, I'm James wealthy, I wish James has a good life. Then my friend's why? We never talk about it. She gave me the wish, I really, really touched. She say, I wish James know what he wants and find someone he like and stay together forever. He only used someone. He never had girlfriend, boyfriend, or wife. Apparently, they all know that. And sometimes you really think about, for the rest of your life, are you going to live for yourself? Or are you going to live for your parents' expectation? Or I would say it's really discovering who you are and what you will live for the rest of your life.
James Wang from Barclays Bank recording his coming out story. Now, we have another message here. Last week's show should win an award. Excellent, from Florence. Thank you, Florence. You
and the check's in the post.
That's it. We had some other messages in the last week or so. Peter said about our Bangladesh show last week, a wonderful show. Thank you, Peter. We also had a message about a story that we covered last week. A Tennessee governor has signed a religious freedom bill which enables counsellors to decline to treat LGBT patients. And Ross said, shouldn't be effing counsellors in the first place then. There we go. So, yeah, because, I mean, it does make you wonder what sort of counsellor would say, I'm not going to treat you because, you know, you're into same-sex activity.
Yeah, it leaves me speechless. I mean, what to say? It's like, yeah, you got to question what their motives are and, you know, what their work ethic is if they're going to take issue with someone's LGBT status.
If they're going to put their religion first before actually solving or dealing with the issue of the person, then what are they doing being a counsellor in the first place?
So the good news is you probably wouldn't want to have seen them anyway, so they probably just did you a favour. Steer clear.
Well, you'd like to hope so. Although I have a friend who lives in Tennessee and he's...
A counsellor?
No. He is gay, and it's very challenging for him from the perspective of speaking to a sympathetic gay doctor. In order for him to see someone, he has to drive all the way to Dallas, which is about 2 hours.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, 2 hours to Dallas, 2 hours back. So
in a country with a population of a couple of hundred million, that's amazing.
Well, Tennessee is a very religious state and doesn't have a lot in the way of LGBT organizations. And what ones they do have are mostly in the big cities. So that makes it really challenging for him. So, yeah, it can be quite tough. So I can understand how this could be a real issue for someone in Tennessee, because the whatever counselors or medical professionals nearby that they can access, being told, well, we don't want to see you at all because of your, you know, your sexuality, is, you know, it really is a blow. It really is.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
Hi, this is Effie from Pewa, Kenya. We are supporting gender and sexual minorities in Africa on the World Wide Web.
A big thank you to Ray Young from the Hong Kong Lesbian and Gay Film Festival. And thank you to all the people who put messages on Facebook in the last week or so. And thank you to our listeners who sent us SMSs tonight as well.
And a big shout out to our podcaster, Mark, doing the hard yards in the background. Thank you.
What have we got next week, Paul?
We have, guess what, Eurovision.
Oh, Eureka. Fantastic. So Eurovision next week. And what are we finishing the show with tonight in terms of music?
We are finishing with Jao Hell, and the English translation is to love.
As we love each and every one of you. Have a good week. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.